Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with a couple of my favorite people. Dr. Sherry Denham, that's one. Dr. Henry Cloud, that's two. Your phone calls, 1-800-229-3000. We're glad you're with us here today on New Life.
Struggling with abandonment issues, and I want to know how to move forward from it.
How would I reconcile a betrayal from a friend that was just a really deep wound?
I can always do good for short periods of time.
Yeah.
Like, pick myself right back up.
Michael, I believe you, and I hear that in you. We see that. But none of us were designed to have to pick ourselves up.
First of all, I'm wondering why it has to be somebody's fault that he died, because terrible things do happen in life.
I think you're going to lose
this
battle.
I have to let it go, don't I?
Yeah.
Part of what I would do is spend some time preparing my family to say, this is going to be tough, but we need to put it in the context of what would Jesus have us do.
Hi, everybody. Steve Arterburn here, and glad you're with us today on New Life Live. Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. Sherry Denham, what's going on right now behind the camera is a coaching session,
It's a discussion.
A discussion for Sherry. And one of the things that I know they were discussing, it is difficult for a confident, intelligent woman to find a healthy, self-confident, competent male would be kind of a challenge.
Really?
Well, that's what I think Sherry was kind of throwing out there.
I was just asking for a little bit of coaching, you know, get my free
programs. Actually, what you're asking was the difference between or ferreting out, and this is hard, I think, for a lot of women, to ferret out the difference between an aggressive, in the good sense, an aggressive, strong man and a narcissistic man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Narcissistic meaning somebody that's really self-absorbed.
Self-absorbed.
That it's kind of about him a
right.
lot. And so in a conversation you may be having with a strong man, it seems to always go back to him, what he's doing, you know. And that's okay. And when you're getting to know someone, maybe in the first couple of times you're with them. But if that kind of happens.
Well, why would that even be okay then? See, at some point.
That's
when you really start to look at it, what's going to happen is, as you smell that, it's like you out to dinner, and if they serve you a meal and you're going, something smells funny about this, you send it back. Well, that's what dating ought to look like.
Henry,
right?
Are men trainable that are self-absorbed?
Ooh, nice question.
That's a really, really good question. And yes, yes and no. And that's the difference.
I think they're trainable if they're staying safe on this. I'm not saying some aren't.
Ooh, it's getting hot in here, people.
There's two different types,
right.
Or three different types of self-absorbed men.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
Let me just say this.
One of those types is the guy that literally doesn't see what he's doing. He doesn't know that. He thinks that's being a good conversationalist.
Right.
He doesn't know. And he's trainable, if you can point. But to talk about the types.
But what happens is, a lot of times the women won't train them because they won't show up and say something like, you talk about yourself a lot. Or, do you realize that, you know, we've gone out on three dates and I know everything about all your accomplishments and you don't even know how many people I have in my family?
Yeah.
Or if they would say something like that instead of just bat their eyes and feel how, you know, mirror all of his wonder.
Wow,
and
he's
how
so fascinating.
Oh, and your Ferrari is so red and all of the, you know.
Yeah.
You're not going to fix one like that, and you're not going to find out
right.
if he's fixable.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So, but there's different ones, that, and some of it's out of shame and insecurity.
Sure.
Some of it's because they've never run into a woman who is secure enough to not do the mirroring thing. But then there are some that truly are envy-based, grandiose, narcissistic character disorders that ought to make you nauseated anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
So you got to wonder how you even ended up on a date with them.
Right.
That you should have. It's so obvious.
Yeah. But the better option is none of those. A normal guy. Just find a normal guy.
Good old normal
oh,
guy.
You don't know how hard that is. I'm
going to. All right, we're going to chronicle this journey, and it's going to get easier than you think.
Yeah, we do need to chronicle it. Hey, we're going to talk about the race for New Life when we come back, and then we'll go right to the phones. Glad you're with us here today on New Life Live. We'll be back.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
We're back. If you're watching on television, you're seeing me hold up the NLM 2011. This is a running bib that you can download from newlife.com. If you're listening on radio, it's a rectangle with a nice picture on it and a number. It's a 5K fundraiser for New Life, and the goal is that you, in your area, when you want to run or walk 5K, you get 11 people to sponsor you at $10 a piece, and that's $110 that you send us to pay for one average day of radio. There's a $30 sign-up fee, and if enough people will do this, as in 10,000 people, it will help us stay on the air greatly. So go to newlife.com and get involved with our race for New Life. You register right there. You run the 5K your way. That's the goal. And all of us here at New Life are going to be either sponsoring somebody or running and walking or whatever. We're going to get involved with this. Henry actually made a statement, if I don't have to run it, I'll support you more. And I thought that was, well, how honest that was. That's very typical.
I have a bad knee.
Yeah, bad knee. All right, anyway.
If you don't make me run, I'll double my donation.
Go to newlife.com.
Could he ride his bike? Yeah. Could you ride your bike?
I could ride my bike. Yeah. I can do that.
Do
please,
10K then.
Please, go to newlife.com. We would love for you to join us in that. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, newlife.com.
How about elliptical miles at the gym?
Does that counts.
Any way you do it, anyway, as long as it's 5K.
Hey, elliptical mile, you're going up and over, so that counts double. Sharon from Columbus, Ohio, WCVX is the station. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Hello there, and how could we help you today?
Okay, my question would be, in regards to getting back into ministry after my husband has had two emotional affairs on me, which began, we've been married for about 30 years, 28 years, and he came across a girlfriend from his past. And obviously, out of curiosity, they met each other and struck up a friendship, which continued. I actually found out about it 3 months into the first affair.
Is he saying that? Is he saying they never saw each other in person?
They never saw each other for 29 years.
Did they? No, did they connect on Facebook or something?
No. One of somebody who had met her, she connected with a friend of his and found out that they knew this person, this fella knew my husband.
I'm asking you, did they ever see each other face-to-face during this emotional affair time?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And why do you think it was just emotional?
That's what he claimed.
Right, because most emotional affairs are over the internet or the telephone, and the reason that you're face-to-face isn't to continue an emotional affair. I'm just saying that that's usually the case. Okay, is he in ministry?
We're not now.
In what position? In what? Just curious. What position were you?
I'd rather not say.
Okay.
All right.
In reference to that, that's what my question has been. The emotional affair obviously led into dating and into, obviously, physical contact and connections, but supposedly never into a sexual affair. He supposedly stopped, but within about less than 2 months, they ended up again together, and she moved to our area of the country, and because he had gone to see her where she lived a few times. Well, then she moved to our area, and they continued for another almost a year and a half. Which
just,
I knew
just
was wrong.
Just holding hands, just seeing each other and holding hands.
Well, no, physically kissing, and but supposedly never having any intercourse.
All right.
So what, I know I'm what's having a little problem
what,
believing.
Okay, so what's the question for us?
Okay, my question is, after he did confess, it was more of a, he said, I'm sorry. And I know I've read all this, and I've read a lot of your books, but I'm sorry, and I was supposed to understand that it was a midlife crisis. I do understand there's midlife crisis, but I'm not willing to just accept that that means that it's okay.
Well, is that what he said, that it's okay?
No, but it was for me to understand. It wasn't that it was okay, but to understand it was a midlife crisis.
So he's making excuses. He's making excuses for his behavior.
Is he making excuses, or is he explaining it?
Well, I felt like it was both. I felt like it was explaining what had happened and having understand, and this is what happened.
Well, let me give you two scenarios, okay? Let's say somebody is an addict, all right? And they go into recovery, and in recovery, and they're fully coming clean, and they're doing the moral inventory, and they're learning that their addiction had to do with a craving inside for, out of emotional deprivation, that they never were loved, or, they were abused, or all this sort of stuff. And they're understanding those dynamics. They're using that understanding, taking it into their current relationships, healing and doing all of that. And in no way are they excusing their behavior, but they're understanding what drove it, okay? That's not excuse making. Excuse making would be if he's saying all this stuff and saying, yeah, but it was a midlife crisis. Therefore, honey, you shouldn't have a problem with me. You shouldn't be upset. You should just, blow it off, that, it wasn't about you and all this, where he's using that either to not take responsibility like a true recovering person does, or to somehow mute your pain about it.
Mm-hmm.
So which is it?
Okay, it started off with the excuses for probably about a year, and then I'd say the last 3 months it has turned into more of the second, I see what I've done to you. Just recently it's turned into that.
Oh, that's better.
And I've been appreciating that. My question is, though, I'm not ready to go back into ministry yet because I've tried to explain until we heal. I don't see how the comment was made that, if we would just start ministering, it would help us heal. And I'm not agreeing with that. And that's my question.
I don't think
having a baby to try to save your marriage.
Yeah, I don't think you do ministry to heal.
No,
If you look at, for example, just look at the 12-step model. Step number 12 is having gone through this awakening and all this healing and all this stuff that you share it with others. And that's what,
that's after you've done the steps 1 through 11.
Yeah, that's right. It's number 12.
Okay.
So, no, what you do is you take your healing. The Bible says in 2 Corinthians 1, for example, that we comfort with the comfort with which we have been comforted by God. In other words, that you're coming from a healed place, and you take what you learned and the wisdom and the healing and all that, and you go give it away and help others. Galatians 6 says that if somebody's caught up in a trespass or something, you who are spiritual, meaning, kind of like sort of are in an okay place, you go and restore somebody with the spirit of gentleness, it says, lest you fall into the same trap yourself. So there's an assumption there that you're not in that same trap. You're kind of past it.
And Sharon, I'm just picking up on, I don't know what you've done to heal, to do your work.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels to me like you're somewhat guarded, that there's still some secret keeping there, that you're really not fully feeling free to share your story and to step back into the really vulnerable world of being in ministry. Because when you step out of ministry, when that falls down around you, it is painful. Lots of people are impacted. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like it's what happened with you, right? So let me say this. I'm just going to lay a card down with you. I don't know if you know, I was married to a pastor who struggled with sex addiction, had affairs. Did you know that?
I heard you say that on the radio the other day.
Okay. So I'm coming to you. I'm laying my card down in front of you right now, Sharon, going, girl, there's some work to be done for you to heal and for you to learn how to rebuild trust with your husband again. There's been some violations there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Before you step back into the limelight, you stay strong. You present your need and you go do your work. You get some healing. You come to our conference in September. You go with your husband to the marriage conference in May.
Well, maybe I missed it, but has your husband done anything about his lust?
No, that's what I have. I have been in counseling.
Well,
the first time.
Well, you and must require of him to deal with his problem.
Okay, I've felt that way, but because I'm one of those that. And there's many of us who, in ministry, you just keep quiet and you walk it alone.
Yeah.
He can keep quiet. He can go to a place where people don't know him, but he needs to go get help. Otherwise, you're enabling him, and you'll have your third relationship occurrence pretty soon.
Okay, I'm hearing.
It's not about stopping. It's about starting to become intimate with his wife.
Okay.
All right. I'm glad you called. Let me send you a copy of Every Heart Restored, Wives in the Battle. That's the workshop that Sherry's going to be doing. I hope that you will come to that. 1-800-NEW-LIFE. I want to talk to John. John's calling us from Dallas, Texas. Listens online. Hello, John. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Appreciate it.
What's going on?
I'm in a 5-month dating relationship.
Okay.
And my question is regarding kind of emotional distance that I'm experiencing with my girlfriend right now.
Hmm.
I've been away on an internship. I'm in college, and so we've had a long distance relationship for the past 2.5 of those 5 months. And you know, I've kind of gotten used to us being a little bit more distant than I would have liked. But now that I'm back at school, it seems like some distance is still occurring.
Okay.
And as a guy, I'm just kind of confused because, you know, part of that seems like, you know, I'm supposed to be the initiator and I'm supposed to be the pursuer, and I accept that. But at the same time, you know, I'm usually the one when I'm out of town, you know, doing the calling. And, you know, she'll text me maybe once a day or every other day just saying, I hope you have a great day, you're doing great, stuff like that. But I'm really kind of wondering.
When you were gone, the internship or back now?
She's been doing that kind of all along, like that. So she'll send me like a text or something, but she won't usually ever call or anything like that or pursue, you know, hanging out.
You mean now?
Things like that.
Now that you're back?
Yes.
So why is...
I've only been back for a week or two.
But are you on the same campus?
Yes, same campus.
So, John, why is that okay with you? Like, why are you tolerating that?
Well, it's strange because just whenever I'm with her, it's she's very caring, and you know, she's said some strong things about, you know, how she feels like she's, you know, even falling in love with me, and you know, she has called a few times and stuff, but you know, I'm the main pursuer, and I've kind of accepted that because I felt like that's what the guy does, as you know.
But doesn't that feel a bit like hot and cold?
It definitely does a little bit.
Yeah. So you're already starting to pick up on a pattern? Right?
Right.
And that's right. A part of who she is. She may be a woman that comes close and goes really deep when you're in her presence, but then, like, pulls away.
Mm-hmm.
It might be part of her intimacy style that may be somewhat broken. Right?
Right. Right. Exactly. And she's definitely had a broken past with her parents.
What kind?
And I'm wondering, and, you know, she's told me and been... The thing is, she's been very vulnerable, and she's told me all about her past struggles. And we've definitely, whenever we're with each other, we build a very deep emotional connection. It's whenever I'm away from her that I start to feel distant.
Well, what was it like this on the whole time on the internship and before, or has this started more since you've been back?
It's been similar to this during the internship. And she, part of that, I think she knew I was very busy, and she told me she didn't really want to call because she thought I was, you know, going to be at work and things like that. And then now since I'm back, we're back at school, and, you know, she's telling me she's busy with school. And things.
Well, here's one thing that I would check out. Sometimes what happens is when somebody has been away for a while, the re-entering is difficult for the other party. Mm-hmm. And that could be because, like Sherry is saying, maybe she has some closeness, abandonment issues, or, you know, whatever. But you might find if you, just to test this out, if you just remain stable and secure and not turn this into a problem and just be there over the next few weeks, what you might find is after this long separation, she may kind of reconnect and sort of coagulate around the relationship again. If not, then there could be some sort of issue.
We'll be back. Julie, we'll go to you next.
Experience new life in the Holy Land June 6th through the 16th. Join Steve Arterburn, Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Sherry Denham, and Mylon Yurkovich of New Life Live for a daily time of teaching. You'll have the experience of a lifetime visiting the places where the events of Scripture really happened. Jerusalem, the Sea of Galilee, the Mount of Olives, Masada, and much more. Not only will you see the sites that bring history and Scripture to life, but Stephen Curtis Chapman will perform a once-in-a-lifetime private concert. Out of these ashes, beauty will rise, and we will dance along the river. We will see it. If there was ever a trip you don't want to miss, this is it. Experience new life in the Holy Land June 6th through the 16th. Call and sign up today at 1-800-223-3855. Or for more information, visit newlife.com. Visit Israel. You will never be the same.
I wish I was who you think I am. The one you thought you married. The ideal husband, the amazing dad, the great lover. But my mind is filled with darkness, with images that I can't erase. I want so desperately to be the man you dreamed of. The man I know I can be. I am terrified to talk to you about this. But I want to. I need to. I want us to be close just as badly as you do. Can I talk to you? Can we be totally honest and know that we love each other enough to be open?
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help. I want help. I can't do this on my own.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here, and we're going to Israel. I want to show you a clip of me there at the Dead Sea. It's one of the places we're going when we go to Israel in June, 16th through the, I mean, the 6th through the 16th. Sherry, are you looking forward to it?
I am.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I've never been, so it's going to be my first time.
It'll be great. John Townsend, Stephen Curtis Chapman, his family coming. And they're going to do a concert on the steps of the temple where Jesus walked, stood. But here is a little clip from the Dead Sea that I did when I was there.
We're here at the Dead Sea, and all my life I've heard how dead it was. And I think I've heard every devotional possible on that Dead Sea and no water going out and coming in and all of that. I've also heard how fun that it is. Is it fun, Joe? Joe Franklin says it's fun. But what I never counted on, what I never thought, was how beautiful it is. This is one beautiful sea. I hope you'll come see it. June 2011. Come experience new life in the Holy Land.
Well, it's going to be a great, great, wonderful time. Find out more about it at 1-800-NEW-LIFE or newlife.com. I said I'd go to Julie, and I'm going to go to Julie right now. Laguna Niguel, she listens on KKLA. Hello, Julie. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm anxious and lost my peace over a situation. briefly, I'm 57. My husband is 60. We've been married 37 years. We're both, you know, good, strong Christians. And we've had some friends for the past 20 years who are ages 66 and 77. And they were friends through our sons who played sports together. And we remained friends for 20 years. And it was always the relationship kind of evolved to where it got pretty close. And then I would feel like they were getting a little too close. They're not Christians, but they're open. And so I would kind of pull away.
What did too close mean?
They would kind of act needy, and they would kind of expect us to always be there for them and to be their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't feeling that close to them. It's kind of, I kind of compare it to when you're in junior high and you have a crush on somebody. You like them, but they don't like you as much.
Yeah.
But we always felt like they were kind of like a mission field to us, and they were very receptive, and they would come to church with us and all of that. So the relationship remained fairly strong. We shared holidays together. My husband and his and Larry went on trips together and whatnot, camping trips with the boys. And so it was a good relationship, but I found myself always kind of pulling away at times, but wanted to remain open because I could see the positives in it, and they're very kind, loving people. They moved out of state and were gone for 10 years, and when they would come back to visit, they would always stay with us, and that got to a point where it was a little much as well. I would have to kind of pull back in that area because it became just too too predictable and too, I felt like it was, we were sort of being taken advantage of in a way at times. And so anyway, my husband is recently retired. He's got a vision problem. He doesn't drive. And we've got grandchildren that we take care of, so I'm full of responsibilities. Well, they involved in some also some Christian organizations, and they decided they wanted to move back to California. And we were pleased about that. And I just kind of in my mind got ready, okay, I'm just going to have to, you know, set some boundaries here and keep things calm and in control. Well, long story short is that they ended up, without telling us, buying the house next door to us.
Okay. Without telling you?
Yes.
Why wouldn't they tell you?
I guess they thought we were going to be so elated they wanted to surprise us.
Surprise.
Yeah. And
wow.
My husband is this really likable person who is friendly, and I've just kind of been freaking out about it, to be honest with you. And we went ahead and had a dinner with them where I told them how I was feeling. I told them we like you as friends, of course, but I said I've never wanted a Ricardo Mertz relationship with my neighbors, you know? I said I need my privacy, and I feel our son and daughter-in-law were moving from Anaheim to Mission Viejo, and a house went for sale on our street, and we talked about it. And I told them this, that we felt like, all four of us felt like that would be too close for comfort. And I said, that's our own son. And I said, I feel that way about you guys, you know.
Ouch.
Yeah. And
so what was their response to...
This is after they had bought the house?
What was my response?
What was their response? And Henry's asking, this was after they bought the house. You said these things.
Yes, it was about 2 weeks. I was just going crazy thinking about it. So
what was their response?
Well, she said, space is what you want, you've got it. And he said, we don't plan on knocking on your door every day, and, you know, we're going to want our privacy too. And he said, we did not buy the house because of you. We bought it because we liked the house. But interestingly, it's nothing like the homes that they were wanting to buy, you know.
Sounds like they really liked you guys.
They adore us. They think of us as family. They absolutely
are. They used to.
Now, when she said space is what you want, space is what you, was that like a, did she say that in a nice way or in kind of a hurt and defensive way or what?
It was a little anger. There was a little anger to it. You
it
know,
sounded that
like,
way.
You got it, girl. You want space, you're going to get space.
I'll show you what space
is. Yeah, it was kind of like that.
Well, what's the question for us as we go to this break? What's the question you want answered?
Well, I'm dealing with a lot of guilt feelings, and they've moved in on Saturday, and you know I've got a plan to take over there in a cart. I just want to know how I'm supposed to act, and have I done something wrong?
Okay, we will help you with that when we come back, and I'm glad you called us about this. You're listening to New Life Live or watching New Life Live. 1-800-229-3000 to be on the program, and 1-800-NEW-LIFE to talk to a person who cares about you and wants to talk to you about your situation.
My clothes are falling off of me. People are making comments. I would pick up my food, and I was running every day, 6 miles a day. And I got to the point where I was afraid to drink water because I didn't want to gain water weight.
10 million women and girls have eating disorders. Anorexia or bulimia isn't a diet, it's a disease.
My parents knew then that something had to be done immediately.
New Life's Eating Disorders Treatment Clinic can help.
You see that everybody that works there loves God and is wanting to help you.
For more information about our Eating Disorder Treatment Clinic, call New Life today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Find hope for your child to begin healing and embrace life. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I decided that I wanted to work with eating disorders and help save people's lives on a daily basis.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
I know that with God and Renuta that my life was spared.
I counsel people every single day. I help marriages. I help broken people find healing. I teach the good news of a Savior that loves us. But why can't I accept it myself and break free from this bondage? I can't stop looking at pictures that I shouldn't be looking at, and fantasizing and lusting, and now I've taken it a step further and gone to a strip club. I have to stop. I want to stop.
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help, and I can't do this on my own. I want to be the pastor that God wants me to be.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Sherry Denham, Dr. Henry Cloud. We're talking with Julie and the people that were a mission project that they didn't really see spending the rest of their life with have moved in next door. Now, Sherry, you wanted to talk to Julie.
Yeah, hey, Julie. You know what? I kind of have been listening with a little different ears, and I just wanted to ask a couple questions. So which one of your parents was really needy?
Well, my mother left the family when I was 5, and she died when I was the age of 8 due to alcoholism.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't have – my dad was a lawyer. He had custody of us, so I rarely saw her, and my few memories of her were – I have 2 sober memories of my mother. So I guess I call that needy. I don't know.
Yeah, overwhelmingly needy. Because what I'm hearing from you, Julie, is some ambivalence about connection. It's a little bit like come closer, go away, come closer, go away. Like it's scary to let these friends become more than a mission field in your life. And I'm just hearing you need your privacy. They're too close for comfort. Even our kids to live a certain distance is too close to comfort. And my guess is that growing up, there was a lot of overwhelming needs around you, and you didn't have the safety or the boundaries to have some space, to have your privacy. And so it's kind of continued to be played out in your adult life.
I resonate with some of that. It's just that normally, like with our other neighbors and friends, our home is open, and it's really a social place.
Right. But when you have someone that wants more of you, it's frightening, and you feel glommed on like some of the things that was happening in your home growing up. So I would love, I'm just thinking how we love book, for, as far as you looking at what your intimacy issues are, because I think they're playing into this relationship with these friends, and maybe in other relationships too, and you may not even be aware of it.
There is one other relationship that is exactly like it that I feel have the same feelings about. It's my sister-in-law and her family.
Yeah. Well, are there relationships where you don't have this feeling?
Yes.
Yeah, because I was hearing a little bit from that there was kind of that lacking of the natural chemistry that would need to be present for the kind of closeness that this couple had sort of assumed with you? Right. Is that right? Like sort of a match. Yeah. Like you didn't want to be as close to them just in general as they did with you.
Exactly, yes.
And whatever the background stuff is that y'all were talking about with the stuff that Sherry pointed out, when you mix in somebody's sort of kind of whatever the word would be, their hunger for you, and you might have some boundaries issues, you know, to grow in just you know, as a matter of course, then that can feel really overwhelming if you put both of those together.
Yeah.
And what I was hearing was that the repair work that may need to be done would kind of, whatever conversation to your question, what, you know, that you have from here would be something that includes sort of both of those, you know, that says, you know what, you guys are good friends. We spend a lot of time with you. We want to spend time with you, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, privacy is and space is important to me. I don't want you to hear that, Susie, like you heard it, like, you know, we never want to see you or anything like that.
Rejection.
But, yeah, but I have my own issues just of, you know, kind of sort of feeling overwhelmed anyway. And I was just, in order to kind of get it out there on the table and be able to be friends and all that and have it be natural, I just kind of put it out there, and I hope it's not taken personally and that we can still spend time together, but know that sometimes when I want to be by myself or by ourselves, that won't be a bad thing.
Yeah. I have a feeling. I actually have seen her twice, and she was polite, you know, so I don't think it's going to be a problem to mend if there is an anger with her. I think she'll easily get over that.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what I was thinking. Okay, so Christ came down and someone said, what's the greatest commandment? And he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. So then the question comes, well, who's my neighbor? And he tells the story of the Good Samaritan, which would be like telling the story of the good Al-Qaeda or something like that if it was modern day. So the problem that was illustrated in the Good Samaritan story was that good people were indifferent or preoccupied or rejecting of a Jewish man who had been beaten up on the road. And so if you're looking at how to connect with your neighbor or be to your neighbor, you certainly don't want to be those things, right?
Right.
And you want to get away from, I think, try to get away from your fears and agenda and get into truly loving those people. That doesn't mean you have them live with you or that you're with them anymore. But I would ask God to give me a true, deep, abiding love for those people next door.
Just the rest of the story was, I want you to remember this, lest you're having a panic attack right now.
Yeah.
If you read the story of the Good Samaritan, what he did was, like Steve says, he loved him, and then he said, I've got to go off and do my business now. I'll see you back. I'll be back in a few days or whatever. So love does not mean that you don't have your own space.
Right.
And he left the guy there at the inn. Now, if you read the story of the codependent Good Samaritan, when he did that, the guy said, what do you mean you're not going to stay here? How can you just leave me? I was beaten up. You call yourself a Christian?
And then the Samaritan said, give me two rooms.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll stay.
So just because you're loving doesn't mean that you don't have your own space. In fact, Proverbs says that, you know, you start to hate the neighbor that's there too often.
Yeah. Right? And here's the thing. In keeping with brownie therapy, it means you bake brownies for them, but you don't have to go inside and eat the brownies with them. But I really think this, if you ask God to help you have a true and abiding love for them, I think God will honor that request. It's like you're laying it out to God. Don't really love these people, but I want to. They're in our neighborhood. They closed escrow. And I think it's going to, I mean, you can't move them out. You don't want to move. The best thing is if you have a true feeling of love for them and proper boundaries for you and your husband.
And the love may come a little bit more freely. Like, Julie, when you said that they are a mission field to us, I have to say inside, there's just something that I just went, oh, yeah. I wouldn't want to be a mission field friend to you.
Yeah, you just
I think maybe even that label that you put on them is a part of how you're self-protecting, right? Because of not feeling boundaries.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, if we have those boundaries, then we don't have to make people anything other than other people,
yeah.
Right?
Well, I'm glad you clarified, because I've kind of seen you as a mission field, Sherry, and I'm going to give that up.
Thank you. Right.
Henry,
Steve,
anything
I didn't
say?
Tell you, but I just closed escrow on a house next door to you.
Okay.
Wow, I'm bringing the brownies, and we're all coming
then.
Inside.
All right.
Oh, gosh.
what was it, Sarah Palin, that some reporter moved in next door that wanted to cover her life, and he bought the house next door to them
kidding.
Or something? Yeah.
Oh,
so,
that's painful.
Pretty invasive.
When you
there.
Build a well, big,
what
big
is
wall.
The proverb? There's a proverb that talks about don't darken your neighbor's door too often lest he get sick of you or
yeah.
something. So there's, God has built in separateness and freedom and autonomy and boundaries and all that into the universe. And if it's too enmeshed upon, anybody would get a little scratchy.
Sure,
if
absolutely.
I wrote the Proverbs, it would say this. Woe unto you, people don't like you half as much as you think they do.
Wow, that's deep.
It's just a thought. Janet from Torrance, California.
Unless somebody's been rejected their whole life and they don't feel like anybody likes them.
Janet from Torrance, California. KKLA is the station she listens to. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great.
How
What's going
you?
On?
Question?
Yes.
Well, the reason I called is because two things, but they might go together. I don't
okay.
know. I don't make good decisions. I make decisions that hurt me. I'm 49 years old, and I've been doing it ever since I can remember. I grew up with a dear mother who did her best to take care of all 11 children when the husband abandoned her, and we moved a lot. And we spent some time, in foster care, but we were never left for more than a year. She'd always come back to get us. Love my mom. But I grew up believing that I couldn't trust adults, really, that I had to be independent. I couldn't depend on them. And now that I've gotten sick, I come down with cancer, and I'm having all kinds of issues.
Mm.
Right now, I'm feeling, and I've had to call on my family for help. Now, they've been there, but not without the attitude, except for my mom.
Okay.
My sister,
hold on.
Not without the attitude.
We'll go to a break and come back. Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
I feel like I'm a person for the first time in my life. I feel like I wasn't whole before, or that I couldn't enjoy life. I had such a big weight on my shoulders that I had nothing to look forward to. I'm such a better wife, and I'm a better daughter, friend, a better worker. I feel absolutely free.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
If anybody is considering Christian counseling, then they need to do it. They need to take that step.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Max Licato. My friends at New Life want to help you find healing and restoration based on God's truth. They have a workshop to help men who are stuck in the entanglement of pornography. They have another for both men and women to deal with any issue you might be facing, anger, depression, grief, or whatever you're struggling with, they can help you. Or if you know someone fighting an addiction to drugs or alcohol, they offer a Christian treatment program. And if you know someone struggling with an eating disorder, they can help you there too. Call them today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. The Apostle Paul writes in Romans about the transformation that comes through the renewing of your mind. It's God's Holy Spirit that makes this happen. and he's working through this ministry at New Life. Call today and see how you can experience that for yourself. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud and also Dr. Sherry Denham talking with Janet from Torrance. And Janet, you were saying you don't make good decisions and
I'm not making the best decisions. Yeah. I don't think I ever really have. Mostly when I grew up and I could start working at like 17, it was all about being able to take care of myself and having things that we couldn't have and doing the best I could. I found a job that I was really, really good at, but I didn't do very well as far as handling the money that came with it. I gave a lot. Yeah.
Well, what's the question for us then?
Well, the question is that I don't know how to mesh all these things together, but I'm not making good decisions, and I need to find out or I need to know how I might, if you could help me, at a place to start. I have a job that I'm not committed to anymore because I'm having so many, there's so many things going on right now as far as depression goes. I go in and out of it. One day I'm feeling really good, like I'm on top of the world and I can really handle this. And then,
let's stick with
the
decision.
Very next day, it's, I don't want to live anymore thing. And
hey,
I'm,
Janet, let's just deal with this one thing about making decisions, okay? And then that'll affect everything else. And I want to hear from Henry, and I want to hear from Sherry. But I first want to just say that sometimes making good decisions doesn't mean surrendering our decisions to God, as we've never done before. But it does mean surrendering to a process. It's saying, maybe I don't have it in me right now to see things accurately from an objective point of view to make a good decision. So I'm going to surrender to a process where I don't make big decisions on my own, that I have people close to me that help me with my decisions. I stop being independent in decision making, and I either have a sponsor or I have a mentor or I have a counselor, a therapist that can help me in the big decisions of my life. That's what I mean. To me, that's better than a formula for decision making. Okay, Henry, Sherry, what do you think? What can we help her with? She's got cancer. She's really wanting some help.
Well, do you want to go first?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Janet, I am hearing an amazing woman who is a trauma survivor. And I work a lot with trauma, with people with traumas, and you have had a number of them. And one thing I've learned in the work that I'm doing, and I'm still learning, is that there's this part of our brain called the limbic system. And in the limbic system, there's this little part called the amygdala. And in there, it's highly charged memories are stored, okay? Painful events are stored in that. And what happens is usually there's a label wrapped around a powerful memory, a label that might look like this, a negative belief that I don't trust anyone or I am incapable. And so part of helping people do the work is helping to heal that negative belief and moving them to a place of positive beliefs, which are, hey, I can learn who to trust. And I can learn to be capable. Because happen.
How do I do that?
Yeah. Well, it's actually doing some deep therapy with someone who specializes in trauma. But I think there's some level of the I don't trust anyone. There's a part of that you've wired in that's I don't even trust myself.
I don't.
Uh-huh.
Not at all. I mean, I can say that of a certainty. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
And
not
so it's a negative belief. It's a lie that we wire in. But part of us moving to what Steve was talking about is surrendering to what we can do is I can learn. You can learn how to manage your monies. I can learn. If I really believe that, then I go get a class and learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so I would suggest some deep trauma work.
Do you think that it's the same? I know there's other people, but it's I've been stewing over it for years, but do you think that my having anything to do with... I was mad at my mom for a long time because I thought that she abandoned me. So whenever I would make a decision and get involved, even if I saw signs that someone might not be safe for me to do that, I thought maybe I could change their mind if I was, like, good enough or something like that, that they would really like me. And that
right. What,
pull, and after all that...
Well, what I was going to suggest to you is kind of along those lines. If you go... Can you hear me okay? Okay, what I was going to suggest is to begin to pray and meditate on a verse, and it's Hebrews 5:14, and here's what it says, that solid food is for the mature who, through practice, have had their senses trained to discern good from evil.
Okay.
All right, now, God has built into you this very complex system of senses, of how something feels, how it appears to you, kind of that gut feeling when there's a hurt, when you're afraid of something, there's an ouch to it. And what happens is when you go through backgrounds like you've gone through, experience and dysfunctional people talk you out of your senses. And so you've lost the ability to discern when something doesn't quite feel good or feel right. And that's generally where bad decisions come from, like you just said. So I would try to get into a setting where your real feelings are something you become more mindful of and more aware of, and like a good group, or like Sherry was saying, some trauma work is part of that, where you learn to just be able to sit inside yourself for a moment and say, that doesn't feel right. Or that doesn't feel good. Or I don't think I like that. Or if I make that decision and I project 6 months out into the future, that's really not going to feel comfortable to me. And you start to value those, then you'll have the solid food ready for the mature. And that's, you know, God has built these things into, and recovery and growth and all of this is about reclaiming your senses, among other things.
All right. I hope something we've said is meaningful to you. And let me send you a copy of the 9 things you simply must do.
Yeah, there's a chapter in there called Play the Movie. And it means whenever you make a decision, play it forward and see what does that decision look like a month from now or 6 months from now. Mm-hmm.
And we'd love for you to take a movie when you join us in the Race for New Life, which is a 5K run wherever you are. You get to run it, walk it, crawl it, wherever you are. You go online at newlife.com, sign up. It's a $30 registration fee. You download the bib. You get people to sponsor you. If you get 11 people at $10 a sponsorship, well, that covers 1 day of treatment here at New Life, or 1 day of programming here at New Life. And so we would love for you to get involved with that. It's called the Walk Run, the Race for New Life. Also, I mentioned earlier, Israel. June 6th through the 16th, we've got a great team of folks that are going to be talking. I'll be there, Dr. Sherry Denham, Dr. John Townsend, Milan Yurkovich, and of course, Stephen Curtis Chapman is going to be going, and he'll be doing a concert on the steps of the temple. And so we hope and pray that you can join us. If you've ever wanted to go, we think this is going to be a really special trip, and we've got 2 singles coordinators there just to be sure. Their job is to be sure that singles have a great time. And of course, the married couples, we're going to help you have a good time too. But sometimes you feel more out of place as a single. This is the one to go to. We're going to really help you enjoy this trip. So come join us if you can. You can find out about it. It's not too late. 1-800-NEW-LIFE or newlife.com. That's the place to go. My thanks to Dr. Henry Cloud, to Dr. Sherry Denham, and to all of you. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks for those who are part of our giving family. It makes a difference. If you need us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE is the number.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by getting you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries,
P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live.